It's good to have a baptism in Eastertide because the two things help us to understand each other. The meaning of baptism helps us to understand the meaning of Easter, and the meaning of Easter helps us to understand baptism. And it's not surprising that there was an ancient tradition of doing baptisms specifically and only at Eastertide, because the two things are so very closely intertwined. And the common theme, of course, is that death leads to resurrection. It's a kind of principle of the spiritual world, if you like. Natural scientists look for laws of nature and have been remarkably successful over the last few hundred years in finding them. If you make a gas occupy a smaller space, you increase its pressure. Lots of basic laws of nature like that. But I think there are also laws of the spiritual world that have not yet been so thoroughly explored. And I want to look at one of those with you this morning, the principle that death leads to resurrection. It may not be unique to the spiritual world. We can see something like it in the natural world. Those of you who have gardens may well, over the last month or two, have pruned back your roses and cut them back quite severely so that they look as though there's not much of them left. A kind of death-like process. But out of that, they shoot up with great abundance. There's a kind of risen life that shoots up out of a severely pruned rose. And that's an analogy in the natural world for this spiritual principle about which I want to talk this morning, that death leads to resurrection. It's not easy to state it when you try to get precise about it. Death can be followed by resurrection. Death often is followed by resurrection. There's no resurrection without prior death. And whether death is followed by resurrection depends on how much the grace and power of God is at work. And that in turn depends on how much we are open to it. The core example of death and resurrection is, of course, the Good Friday to Easter sequence in Jesus himself. That blazes a trail. It sets up conditions that make it more likely that death will be followed by resurrection in other people subsequently. To draw another analogy from the natural world, it's perhaps a little bit like a nuclear resonance. It's improbable in a way that that carbon should be formed, and carbon is essential for all life, but there's a nuclear resonance that vastly increases the likelihood of carbon being formed. And I think the death to resurrection sequence in Jesus sets up something like that in the spiritual world. There's a kind of resonance created by Jesus that makes it much more likely that death will be followed by resurrection in other circumstances. It's not the very first example of this principle at work. And the first Christians, who were, of course, Jews, saw the death to resurrection sequence of Jesus as being rather like what had happened to their ancestors. They looked back and saw God leading them out of slavery in Egypt into the promised land as rather like death to resurrection, just the kind of thing that God does. And the way that God had led them back from exile in Babylon to their own beloved city of Jerusalem. Another example of death to resurrection. This is what Jesus does. And the psalm we use this morning, Psalm 114, is an echo of that liberation of God's ancient people, the Jews, and the crossing of the Red Sea. And baptism, in which we're engaged today, is this kind of sequence too. It's a point that St. Paul makes twice in his epistles. He made it in the passage from Colossians that we heard this morning. When you were buried with him in baptism, you were also raised with him. And he says it a bit more fully in Romans chapter 6. Do you not know that all of us who've been baptized have been baptized into his death. We've been buried with him by baptism into his death, so that just as Christ was raised from the dead, we might walk in newness of life. If we've been united with him in a death like his, we will certainly be united with him in a resurrection like his. It's not just a parallel between the death and resurrection of Jesus and what happens in baptism. Baptism involves identifying with Jesus' death and resurrection, participating in it. And there's something else important here that a science of the spiritual world needs to understand if we're trying to get to grips with the laws of the spiritual world, that there can be a linkage between two events across a great divide of time and space that enables one to influence another. There's a gulf of nearly 2,000 years between the baptism of Leo this morning and the death and resurrection of Jesus, but still there can be a remarkable consonance between them across that divide of time and space. And if it helps us to understand this, there's something similar that happens in the physical world as well. When two quantum particles have been together, then one always affects the other, no matter how distant they become. When one spins, the other spins. And in baptism, what we're doing is setting up that kind of connection between the person who's baptized, Leo this morning, and Jesus in his death and resurrection, so that when the opportunity arises in the life of the baptized person for death to lead to resurrection, the chances of that going through are greatly enhanced because that linkage with Jesus has already been set up. Of course, baptism alone isn't enough. The baptized person needs to make this connection with Jesus their own. They have to keep it alive. But baptism sets up the connection, at least in outline, a connection that can be fleshed out later. And the very physical act of baptism repeats this death to resurrection sequence, especially if it's done by total immersion, though we're not planning to do that this morning. Going down under the water represents a kind of dying, and coming up out of the water represents resurrection. Baptism sets us up for death to be followed by resurrection. Let's think now a bit more about how all this plays itself out in the life of an individual person. And I'm not thinking only of physical death here. Like St. Paul, I'm thinking of death more broadly, thinking of all those setbacks and sacrifices which are the stuff of human life and of which every human being has a good deal of experience. And I need to explain something very important about what Christians mean by resurrection. I'm taking death quite broadly, and all of us can think of losses of relationship or position or health that have come as severe setbacks, and sacrifices we've made, such as the sacrifices made when people take monastic vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience. There is a kind of dying in all these setbacks and sacrifices. So we're taking death quite broadly, but we're also taking resurrection quite broadly as well. And resurrection is not just bouncing back, not just getting over a setback and getting back to square one. Resurrection is something new and different, in some ways better and stronger than what came before the setback. For one thing, it's more resilient, which is perhaps what Christians mean when they talk about eternal life. but also resurrection often integrates opposites. It brings opposites together. The resurrection of Jesus integrates his ordinary life before the crucifixion and his death. It brings the two together. He lives after the crucifixion, but he lives wounded, bearing the scars of his crucifixion. There are signs of both life and death in the risen Jesus. Resurrection life, in a sense, transforms and integrates ordinary life and death. And that's true of every little human resurrection. It's not getting back to square one, but something that transcends and integrates features of the ordinary normality of what we might call phase one, with the setbacks and sacrifices of phase two, to reach a new and more resilient quality of life in phase three. And if you want an analogy from the natural world, you can think about inoculation. When we become, in a certain limited and controlled way, diseased, so that we will bear some of the marks of having been diseased in our bodies, integrated in a new way, so that we move on to a new kind of life that is more resilient, less likely to become diseased in the future. But the key point here is that anyone who wants to reach this new kind of life has to go via setbacks and sacrifices of the phase that comes before. There's no way round. Jesus couldn't have got to resurrection life without going through crucifixion. Neither can we. The death to resurrection paradigm means that the way to resurrection is via death, setbacks and sacrifices. Now I want to say something about an objection to all this, and I think it's one that's interesting and worth acknowledging. It's an objection that's raised by an American psychologist, James Hillman, much influenced by Jung, but founder of his own school of archetypal psychology. He thinks that Christians are too preoccupied with this death to resurrection sequence in a way that's psychologically unhealthy, that it leads us to move too quickly and easily from the setbacks of death to some kind of resurrection. And he thinks that if you skip over the death phase too quickly, you don't get the benefits from it when you move beyond it. He thinks that the death phase gives people depth. They grow in depth as a result of setbacks and sacrifices. And if they're going to grow in depth, they shouldn't rush through the setbacks and sacrifices. But in many ways, I agree with him. Setbacks and sacrifices do give us greater depth. And I agree that we shouldn't be in too much of a hurry to move through them. You have to spend time in the vales before you can scale the peaks. But I don't agree with his criticism of Christians for believing too much that death can be followed by resurrection. They're right to believe in it, and it gives us hope. It's just we shouldn't be in too much of a hurry to make the journey. Once you've started to see this death to resurrection principle, this law of the spiritual world, it applies everywhere. It applies to the church, for example. The church sometimes needs to die. The church needs to experience setbacks and sacrifices if it is to grow in depth and to move on to a higher form of life. And here, as elsewhere, the path to new forms of life lie through a kind of death. And the church can't duck that any more than anyone else can. And some of the currently fashionable church leadership about church growth suggests that those who are proposing it have not understood this principle at all. They have not understood that the church, like everyone else, sometimes needs to experience a kind of death if it is to be reborn. There's more I could say about other applications, but I'll leave you to work that out for yourself. This morning, we welcome Leo into the company of those who recognize that setbacks and sacrifices can lead to new and better forms of life, and whose ability to move from one to the other is enhanced by identifying with Jesus, who endured a terrible death by crucifixion and who came through it to achieve a new and remarkable form of life. And may all of us who are united with Christ through baptism and beyond baptism experience death to resurrection in our own lives and witness to the powerful way in which in Jesus, death can lead to resurrection. Setbacks and sacrifices can lead on to new and better forms of life. Praise to the risen Lord who makes this possible. Amen. Thank you.